Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. How's everybody doing out there? I hope you're doing well. I'm doing very, very good. It's very sunny and nice here in Florida, and I'm looking forward to spring coming. This episode, my guest is Kurt Nielsen, and we're going to talk about Plowboy Frazier and Kurt's book about him called Howdy Neighbor. So this is a fun conversation. You're going to love this. You're going to learn some things about Plowboy Frazier that I think will be great. So let's take a quick break. And when I come back, I'll have that interview with Kurt Nielsen.
Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the author of the biography, Howdy Neighbor, about Plowboy Frazier, Kurt Nielsen. Kurt, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great this morning. It's good to talk to you, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Sure. Yeah, I know. I know we've been trying to do this for a while. I apologize that it always seems we're on opposite coasts, so it's always been kind of hard to find a time to jive. But
life happens, man.
That's
life
right.
Happens.
It sure does.
Yeah.
So let's just start. I'm curious, what made you decide to write a book about Plowboy Frazier?
Well, he's one of the people that I always loved in wrestling. When I was a kid, he was my absolute favorite. And even though everyone made fun of him, I mean, he wasn't graceful. He wasn't overly skilled or whatever. But there was a certain magnetism to him and a magic that I loved. And there was a warmth. And now I knew that if I didn't write this book, if I didn't do all the things that I could to get his name out there, that he's one of the guys who would have vanished through the sands of time. And I didn't want that to happen. You know, there was a time when gimmick performers like Frazier were so important to the professional wrestling business. I mean, think of an Ivan Putski. You know, Ivan Putski right now, people laugh at his, you know, work rate, as they say nowadays. But at the time, Ivan Putski was like maybe the number 2 or 3 star in the WWF. You know, he was so huge, so prominent, so beloved. And yet to the modern palate, like, oh, that's yesterday's news. Let's not think about that. Frazier's one of those guys, you know, that people just kind of scoff at, you know, especially if you only use his wedding or his WrestleMania 2 match as sort of the litmus test. I mean, there's what can you do? But there's more meat on the bone with Frazier than just that. And I wanted to show his worth and keep his name out there. And, you know, because he's a fascinating character.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Indiana watching Dick the Bruiser. And it's the same that people, they look at that on the surface and they see, like, up in the late 70s and the 80s, and they say, oh, Bruiser was still wrestling, and Bobo Brazil was still wrestling, and
oh, yeah,
Moose Cholak, and they kept thinking,
oh, Moose,
these guys were so old and what. I'm like, yeah, but it didn't matter because, man, they were attractions. Being from that area, everybody knew who those guys were. And it didn't matter what their age was. If they were going to be there, people loved to come see them. It was just that, you know, the territorial days were, it was just different.
And you have to understand context too, because I remember, what was it, Pro Wrestling This Week, that Gordon Solie show that they had. They showed a Moose Cholak match. This was, what, 87, 88? I mean, Moose is old at that point. And, you know, the way that it was filmed, it was super dark and dingy. Yep. And here comes Moose, an older man, very heavy, with a moose head on.
A big head,
Now, out of context, here I was on the West Coast looking at this like, what the heck am I looking at? But knowing what I know now, I mean, yeah, he was valuable to the business. He was valuable to the promotion and the people in the area. And there's a reason why he was being brought out there.
Yeah. That's like my dad hated wrestling, hated it. Did not, just despised it. If I, when I was watching it, he would come in and make comments. It was just, he did not like it. But when he was younger in our home where we live, he went to shows at our fairgrounds when they were there because he wanted to see these guys.
Yeah,
he didn't care about wrestling, but these were stars, and he still went. And he had stories about Dick the Bruiser. He was a police officer. He pulled Dick the Bruiser over one night after a show, and he had these stories. But he knew who these guys were, but didn't like wrestling because they were different. They crossed over to a different level. They were personalities.
Yes, they kind of lived on their own plane.
Yeah, and but Plowboy, he got started in the Gulf Coast area, correct? Down in
yes, he did.
Yeah, that dude. I didn't see that. Who trained him?
A fellow named Duke Scarborough. He was sort of a journeyman wrestler and primarily a referee at the time. So there was a traveling giant. He worked as Paul Bunyan. His name was Max Palmer. He was supposed to be over 8 feet tall. Uh-huh. And he, you know, he had a height, but he wasn't an athlete. They used him as a freak show attraction. And so Duke Scarborough refereed some of his matches, and he took some of those spots that he worked with Max Palmer, and he incorporated that into the Frazier canon. So, you know, just stand here and do this, and your opponent will do that. And that's kind of how he was trained. But he was also trained because of the area. How to shoot and how to really wrestle, because you had to back then.
Yeah.
Especially in the Gulf Coast, you had some dangerous men over there. You know, if you didn't know how to handle yourself, you were done for. So
yeah. And besides the WWF WWE run, he's probably the other thing he's most known for, obviously, is Memphis.
Oh, yes.
And that area, and where he was a huge attraction, had several runs there, right?
Yes.
And Jerry, you know, Jerry Lawler used him all the time. But what's funny is he had a lot of different gimmicks. Like you mentioned, you know, the Paul Bunyan, but in Memphis even, he had a lot of gimmicks. What were some of the, I know, I saw, didn't he do, I think he did a Kamala 2 one time. And
oh, Kamala 2, yeah. Well, so Kamala was getting a little bit stale as a lead performer, and to sort of rejuvenate his career, Lawler said, hey, let's turn Frazier into Kamala number 2. So he was the American giant as opposed to the Ugandan giant.
Yeah.
And he wore the same loincloth that that Kamala did. He put on his, you know, war paint and everything. And of course, it was absolutely ridiculous. You know, it didn't last very long, but, you know, everybody just kind of laughed at it. And, you know, here was Frazier showing off all of his, you know, skin tags and his flab and all of this. And it just, but it's just, it was just meant as most of his runs were, just to be humorous.
Yeah, and then it was just funny because it seemed like he was just game for anything.
Yeah,
and he also did a run. I mean, a lot of people don't even remember. He did a run in Georgia. Had a good run there.
Oh yes, yeah.
And what? We talked about, you know, the territory is. I mean, I think there's Plowboy was always so popular in all these areas he went.
Yeah,
and I've always hypothesized it was just the genuineness of him because what he was on screen is, from what I've heard, that's Stan Fraser. It's not much different.
That's pretty much it. I mean, he might have, you know, amped it up a little bit to be more of a character, but he was a character. He didn't have to amplify it that much, you know.
Yeah.
Stan was just it's a feel thing. You know, when you meet someone, you feel their genuine quality, their genuine warmth, their sense of humor. Fraser didn't need to try that hard. It was just all he had to do was open his mouth and there it was, you know, and that paired with his just massive size. I mean, mm-hmm. heck, you know, it was just a natural. People were drawn to him for a myriad of reasons. But his character helped him overcome a lot of his physical downsides. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you also hear tales that on the side, he sold like replica Rolexes and all this other stuff. And I guess ran a shoe store one time. He was such the epitome of a pro wrestler, just always hustling.
Oh yeah. I mean, I talked to Hillbilly Jim, just a couple weeks ago now. And he said, he's like, he was just a classic old school carny. From, you know, he was like a holdout of the older era, you know, in the WWF. I mean, people acted like, I can't believe this is still here. You would have seen this in the 1950s, but not in the mid 80s. Sure. And he was just such a cartoon, such a crazy character. And everything that he did, it was just a natural extension of his personality, you know, the wheeling and dealing and always promoting himself. I mean, that's what they did in the older days, you know, before cable came along. You know, before any of these, you know, streams of self-promotion. So Fraser just, he couldn't help himself.
Sure. Yeah. And with Fraser no longer, did you have any trouble with your research doing the book with, I mean, he's no longer here, but there are lots of people, you know, associated with him and whatever, still, I'm assuming still out there to talk to and get the story from.
Well, some people were very guarded. You know, this as well as I do. Certain people of an older era will always adhere to kayfabe and they will not open their mouth no matter what.
Yes.
And sadly, because of that, the stories will die with them.
Yeah.
I remember sitting down with Cowboy Bob Kelly and he wouldn't open up his mouth at all about that. And we were good friends. I mean, he liked me and he trusted me, but it was a line he wouldn't cross.
Yeah.
Penny Banner was that way. I remember talking to Penny Banner. And she said, I'm never going to break kayfabe in public because it's something that I spent so much of my life protecting. And I said, but Penny, your stories are going to die with you. And it's kind of the truth, you know. And so that was a big challenge. Fraser's family as well, they're very guarded at the same time, you know. So, you know, I've been in communication with them sporadically, mm-hmm. but they said, yeah, we're just a very closed, tight-knit family, and they appreciated that I did the book, but they didn't want to contribute much to it. The bulk of what I got was from Joyce Fraser, who I was good friends with, as well as friends that I met over the years who were willing to talk, and then they would send me to other people who would open up to me as well. But it's just one of those things, you know. I think it like Johnny Walker, you know, wrestling too. I mean, he wouldn't open his mouth about the past and the stories that guy would have had. Oh my gosh. I mean,
sure.
You know, but they're gone. And so I cobbled together what I could based on what I could. But I do have that disclaimer in the book that many of the things that people know about Fraser and many of the things that he talked about were complete fabrications. His whole life was, you know, kind of tailored to his own interests and you know, why not fudge the truth a little bit when it'll make a better story? So basically, like, Fraser is a, we mentioned Paul Bunyan earlier. He's like a fairy tale character in many ways. So what isn't true sure is interesting. Yeah. But most of the stuff in there is true, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, I've gotten that on several of my episodes in the past with certain guys. You know, I'll put things out there, and you can feel it when they're trying to work you a little, and you just do what you can. You do the best you can. I don't necessarily play along, but I try. You know, I try to dig. But anyway, there's certain, and even if they let you in a little bit, there's certain stories you're like, you kind of roll your eyes, like, oh yeah, okay, no, that's not. But whatever. I don't. That's not for me. I record it. I put it out there. I let them tell their stories. But then you'll get people all the time, though, that don't like comment, oh, that guy's full of shit. And they're like, okay, well, he's a wrestler, right? I mean, to a degree, because they're all territory. Full of shit. I mean, it's...
Of course.
And like, I don't, you know, I let them tell their stories and whatever it is, and you can sort through it the best you can. But it is, you know, when you're trying to write a book, I'm sure, you know, there are some frustrating things, like, you know, if his family won't participate, that is, I've got to be a little bit disappointing, but...
Well... Not unexpected. Yeah, sure.
But I guess the one good thing about Frazier on the professional side, at least, there's lots of content out there, right? Because Memphis is one of the biggest tape libraries out there, and obviously WWE. So that side of it, you clearly got lots to pull from and look. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that big run that he had with Lawler in the mid-70s, I mean, that was huge. That was huge. That was probably Frazier's biggest single run continuously in his career. You know, after the Lawler and Frazier tag team broke up, then they had an ongoing feud. So, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on there. And this was a time when they were making money hand over fist. So, and Lawler always talks about that. And Jerry Jarrett, too, said this is one of the best angles that we ever did in Memphis history, you know, so.
Yeah. And and of course, probably what he's most known for is the WWF, WWE run, where he became Uncle Elmer. And I know there's so many people are so divisive about the Hillbillies, whatever else, but they were so over. It's not even funny. Watching growing up, I mean, I wasn't like a huge fan of the Hillbilly thing at the time. You know, I wasn't. I always liked the Hills. But but still, you had to appreciate, right? Next to, you know, Hogan and some of those top guys, these guys were getting pops just as big.
They were so over. People forget, you know, Frazier throughout his run was, I would call him semi-main event.
Yeah.
And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, he was such a prominent figure throughout his run. And you know, a lot of that is because of his association with Hillbilly Jim. You know, Jim... We all know the story, how he injured his leg and everything, but he was Hogan's tag team partner. I mean, if they didn't have faith in him, he never would have been in that position. Now, one would wonder, like, how his career would have gone if that injury never took place. I mean, it was right after the war to settle the score and right after WrestleMania 1 that he had that injury. I mean, horrible timing.
Yeah.
But he was so popular, so over, and... I mean, continues to be, but Frazier, you know, by association got over, and would he have gotten over at that same level without Jim? It's hard to say, but the fact of the matter is he was over, and, you know, his matches with Jesse Ventura, they were semi-main event as they went across the United States. So it's so easy to write him off, but, you know, the young and uninformed will write off Jimmy Valiant and look at how prominent he was for how long. My gosh, well, Jimmy Valiant was huge.
Yeah, I mean, everybody worries about these days. I mean, they have that tag, you know, work rate, and it's not wrestling wasn't necessarily about the work rate. It was about the emotions and the connection with the fans, and
of course,
and that side, and they definitely had it. And I mean, Jim, even after he couldn't wrestle, got hurt. I mean, they kept him on doing Coliseum videos. So that's how popular he was.
Oh,
they
sure
kept him there, and, you know, as I would venture to guess, I don't know what if they labeled him as this, but one of the first kind of ambassadors types that they had.
Absolutely. And it gets back to what you said earlier. I mean, he was genuine.
Yeah.
People connected with him because he was the real thing. He didn't have to put on airs. He was just himself, and that's what got him over. He represented the company well, and, you know, he was a big, impressive guy, and, you know, pair him with people who could do the mechanical part of wrestling, and, you know, that's why they brought in Junior, of course, but because Frazier couldn't do it. But, you know, work around what he has. He has a lot of strengths. Frazier had a lot of strengths, and they saw that. I mean, Pat Patterson, Vince McMahon, they saw what Frazier could do, just like they saw what Jim could do. And he was there for a reason. You think of the time period, and there was an opinion that, like, oh, anybody could be brought in. You know, we could bring in anyone, a big giant, and get him over. And that's not true. You probably know Silo Sam, you know, Big John Harris, and they called him Little John and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They tried him in the territories, and he fizzled completely because he didn't have that personality. He didn't have the wherewithal in the ring and the natural aptitude for it, which Frazier did. You know, so, I mean, it's Frazier did have skills. He was a trained professional. It's you can't discount that fact. And as made evident in the book, I mean, anyone who worked with him, I mean, even Jerry Briscoe, who I talked with recently, you know, they said he was a good worker, but he didn't always have to be a good worker because he was working his gimmick.
Absolutely. Yes. And and one thing that Frazier, people remember the most from that run is the Saturday Night's Main Event, the wedding with Joyce. Is it Stasko? Stasko. And that got, because of being on Saturday Night's Main Event and the popularity of the company at the time, it got so much media attention.
Oh, it's huge.
So what is it that you about that you think captured the mainstream so much? Because again, obviously Hogan was everywhere and stuff like that, but like we said, the Hillbillies were popular, but this was even outside of the wrestling world. Was it the novelty of the wedding, you think?
It was such an oddball thing. They kept mentioning that there had not been a wedding on broadcast TV and one of the main networks since Tiny Tim in the late 60s on the Johnny Carson show.
Right.
Of course, they did that one on USA Network. But honestly, at the time, who was watching the USA Network? I mean, they weren't as prominent then as they are now. So it was that plus, you know, here's this gigantic hillbilly. They brought in Tiny Tim as part of the wedding. That was the AP photo that was out there. It was Hulk Hogan, Joyce and Stan and Tiny Tim. And there was a lot that they could work on there. They were all over the place and getting a lot of attention, and Stan with his natural charisma, I mean, he got it over too.
Yeah.
Stan was not just some guy standing there offering nothing to the mix. It wasn't all Roddy and Jesse and Hogan. Stan did his own part, you know, just maintaining himself and, you know, and Joyce maintaining herself going through the wedding on its own was a chore, but he interjected humor and a bit of dignity to it. He made it work.
Yeah. And what do you think Jesse Ventura has said that Vince told him to go out there with this poem and bury the hillbillies?
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, he wanted to get some matches out of it. He wanted to get a feud out of it. He saw dollar signs. Jesse was still, I mean, and because I was researching results, Jesse was still getting matches with Hogan for the title at the time. So Jesse could still main event at arenas throughout the United States in 1985. A lot of people thought he was just a commentator at that point. He was still wrestling sporadically. So to put him against Uncle Elmer, you're going to get a high level match for your card. And it made sense. And of course, you know, having Roddy Piper involved, he was the great instigator. So it all worked together in concert to make it what it was. People still talk about it to this day. Those matches still are very fondly remembered by many, despised by many, but people still talk about it, you know?
Sure. And that was, again, back then, that was the name of the game.
Yes.
It wasn't so much about the moves or whatever. It was, you know, the attention, the crowd interaction, the response, much like, you know, you mentioned the WrestleMania 2 match with Adrian Adonis, right?
And that's
never going up, you know, in a textbook as a marquee wrestling match.
Of course not.
That anybody's going to use the guideline, but
no,
it was a high attention match. And
it was.
And probably, I mean, I would venture to guess at maybe one of the most prominent matches Frazier has ever been in, being on WrestleMania 2.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I know you don't, you know, he's not around, you just spoke, but I would have to think that was probably exciting for this this country guy from Mississippi to be in LA on WrestleMania 2.
It had to be, but you know what? It's funny because I was really close with Playboy Buddy Rose, and I did his website for many years. And he was the first wrestler in the very first match in the very first WrestleMania in the ring. He was the executioner. And I asked him, you know, like, what was it like to be part of WrestleMania and all of this stuff? He said, honestly, it was just another wrestling card for me. Some of the wrestlers felt that way. You know, maybe in time they sort of revised their view of things. But I don't know how Frazier would have stood on that.
Yeah, and that is true, right? It wasn't the event it is now. I mean, it was an event, but it's not like now where it's this grandiose, right? It's just it is just a wrestling show with, you know, maybe a little bit bigger crowd, which, but they, you know, but they had, you know, all these guys had wrestled in front of big crowds before. So, but like, you know, we mentioned some of these names, but he, you know, you can't undermine his contributions. He had notable feuds with, as part of the Hillbillies, with, you know, Piper and Orton and Ventura and,
oh, Bundy and Stud.
I mean, Stud. Yeah, these were cake,
yeah,
major
yeah.
players.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And you know, did it, over the course of his career, you always hear people talk stories that they'll chuckle, whatever. Everybody always seemed to like Stan Frazier.
Of course.
Did you ever come across where he had issues with anybody? Any locker room issues with anybody? Was there anybody that he had heat with or had heat with him? Was there any of that involved?
Well, Kamala mentioned in his book that Stan had some racist tendencies and he could kind of browbeat, but I mean, whether that's true or not, I don't really know, but that's what he said. Some of the guys didn't like Stan's, you know, carnival style, his pushing of his wares. They thought it was really tacky.
Yeah.
Especially at a time when they were trying to elevate their game and be on the main stage and be kind of, you know, a little more of the elite. You know, you look at Uncle Elmer standing next to the British Bulldogs, and they're from two completely different universes. You know, you have these modern day workers who are like elevating the game, and they're just these mechanics, you know, and they're just incredible. And then you got Stan Frazier out there selling watches, and you know, in the same locker room, and it's so bizarre. But that's the thing. I mean, wrestling is in itself a carnival, and you have all of these odd types. Well, I should say you used to have all these odd types.
Yeah.
It was more acceptable once upon a time, but now everything is a little more homogenized.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, a Stan Frazier, I don't know if he could get work in any of the major leagues, even if he was in prime physical condition, because I mean, look at Omos. I mean, what could they do with him?
Yep. Sure.
You know, even go back a few years. I mean, Viscera. I mean, what could you do with him after a while? I mean, it's just there's only so much you can do. Even Big Show. I mean, they tried so many gimmicks. He did so many turns back and forth, anything to rejuvenate him. But after a while, his status was diminishing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about that. You know, Mark Henry, same thing. I mean, just these big guys. There's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
But that was the advantage of. Of the territories, you know, you run out of your appeal, you go to another place where you're the shining diamond all of a sudden.
Sure. Yeah. And after Stan left the WWF, he went back to Memphis, obviously.
Yep. Oh, yes.
But had another good run. But then he was calling himself Giant Hillbilly Elmer.
And yeah, he
obviously was playing off that TV attention.
Oh yeah, well, he tried being Uncle Elmer down there, and you know the WWF threatened to sue him, and you know he had all this merchandise printed up, and you know, but he was the first major star to like try to market himself using a new character.
Yeah.
You know, like Barry Windham left, but he was Barry Windham before he left, you know, so that's, he's going to continue being that. But this was the first time that, hey, we created this. You can't take that from us. And now whether they had a leg to stand on in court, I don't know. But Frazier is like, OK, so, yeah, he became Giant Hillbilly after that.
Yeah, that's funny. And I want to ask you about something. It's about Frazier, but it's a little off topic. And I'm hoping, and again, forgive me if this is in the book and I haven't noticed.
Yeah.
There was a low-budget horror movie in 1987.
Oh, yes.
Okay, called Blood Lake. I'm a huge horror fan.
Okay.
And the killer in the movie is named Tiny Frazier.
Yeah.
Now, I have not seen anything to absolutely 100% confirm, but it's always been said that this was Plowboy that played this killer. The director said it was a wrestler who passed away a few years after. And did you come across anything that either leans towards confirming or denying that Plowboy Frazier played the killer in this movie?
I have no clue, to be honest. I know he was, you know, I talk about Capture of the Bigfoot, which he was supposed to be in as well.
Yeah.
And that didn't quite happen because he was in so much pain. But yeah, I really don't know. I really don't know, to be honest, on that one.
If you see it, you could definitely see it being him. The size, everything else. Again, they named the guy Tiny Frazier. I don't know.
Sure.
Just coincidence. It's so weird.
It could have been based on him, you know. So.
Yeah. But, and this guy, it just fits. Again, the director said it was a wrestler who passed away a few years after the movie came. It all timeline fits.
Yeah.
I've always, but again, it's just, like I said, it was just a little low budget movie. There's probably not much documentation or whatever else. I wish there was a way that someone could confirm that it was him. It's not a good movie, but it's a, I'm fascinated by wrestlers in movies and things like that and how they pop up. So it'd be great to know. But again, like I said, he had that little run in Memphis. He retired around 89, ran some of his own shows, trained some wrestlers.
Yeah, 91, I think, was he 90 or 91 he had his last match.
Okay, gotcha. Well,
yeah.
And then obviously one of the more notable people he trained was Hardcore Holly.
Well, he didn't really train him, but he was there at the early part of the career. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because that's what it talks about online, him training Hardcore Holly. But again, Plowboy, a little bit of a hustler, a little bit of this.
Of course.
When you say quote unquote training, is it that old school mentality of, well, Plowboy's around and maybe somebody else is doing it? And
as I always heard, it was Bob Sweetan.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I always wondered about the, because when you read online, right, that guys like this, like Frazier, whatever, trained several wrestlers, you always wonder if what that means, right? Because I didn't see at this point of his life Stan getting in there and doing a lot with them.
Well, Stan never could. I mean, even when he was quote unquote training in the mid 1970s, he would sit ringside and kind of instruct his workers to do certain things with the guys. You know, when he trained Coco Ware, there's a helicopter going over. He mentored him. He told his guys what to do and kind of coached them, but he was doing it by proxy.
And that happened a lot.
Of course.
With lots of guys. And
older wrestlers, that was it. I mean, you know, you think of like a Billy Robinson, you know, in his later years, he could do certain things as a trainer. But, I mean, he was so broken down, he couldn't get down on the mat. So he had somebody who could do the other things for him. Very common.
Yeah.
I mean, Vern Gagne had Khosrow Vaziri doing a lot of that for him. Yeah, so.
That's right.
Yep.
And Stan passed away in 92.
Yes.
Obviously, right, he had issues with diabetes and everything, weight-related, lots of things. You talked about it earlier of, you know, he's a territory wrestler, a character wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
From a different time period. And one of the reasons that you had the drive to write this book was to preserve and not let his name just slip into the times.
Yeah.
What do you think, having written the book, talked to who you have, being a fan of his, what do you think his legacy within the history of wrestling really is?
Well, it's almost hard to quantify it because he was so typical of the great characters of that generation. He was different in that he was huge, obviously, but he was sort of like an amped up version of a lot of the guys that were out there. He's more like a Dr. Jerry Graham type, you know, where Dr. Jerry Graham was just like so off the rails. You know, his legacy will echo just because of the absurdity of it all.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what Stan's legacy will be. It's just like, he was this big, crazy, goofy guy, but also like a sweet, loving, warm character that people really identified with. He was so typical of a lot of the territory wrestlers of that generation. And yet he was so atypical of all the generational wrestlers of that time too. So he had a unique place in the industry, but I think more than anything, it's his humor and his character and his warmth that people remember. When I talk to everybody that grew up watching him, they just talk about, hey, he was just like us, and we really believed in him. We really connected with him, and that's something that you can't achieve anymore.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. it was like having, you know, appropriate that he was Uncle Elmer. It was like having an uncle,
yeah,
someone that you were related to and you connected with on a deeper level.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely think, and again, there's, like you mentioned, there's a lot of guys like this, but he is definitely to me one of those perfect examples of what one of these character type wrestlers were at the time, right? Ned, yeah, had some big success in the territories, right? Enough to get, you know, a cup of coffee and one of the in WWF, sure, or on TV or whatever, and not undermining that, right? You know, he had, yeah, to work to get there and everything else, but you know it, and he had his run, and there was a lot of guys like that, but he is a just an absolute great example of that. Maybe one of the great best examples of it, because you know he lived it so much.
Well, he deserved all the things that he got in the business. It wasn't just by luck. It was through having a presence, having a reputation, having an ability to work, you know, within his limitations. He deserved what he got. You know, all of the guys that made it to the WWF in the mid 80s deserved it in one way or another. You know, not everybody got over to the extent that Frazier did, not by a long shot. I mean, you think of, you know, like C.V. Offey, they were trying to make him the next Jimmy Snuka. And here was a guy with a reputation, you know, who traveled around the world. You know, he was a headliner of that major card in Honolulu, and it didn't translate to the WWF. Corporal Kirshner, I mean, look, he had the big push behind him. You know, he was supposed to be the next Sergeant Slaughter. He didn't get over to any great extent,
sure,
only just moderately. But Frazier got over because he was special. He was different. And he brought his, as much as he could, he brought his A game to the plate. And because of that, people remember him.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's lots more about Stan Frazier that we could talk about and get into, but yeah, we will just push people to go get the book. Again, the book is Howdy Neighbor. Kurt, what's the best way for people to get a copy of that book?
Well, they could contact me at Kurt@MrKurtNielsen.com. That's MrKurtNielsen.com. Or they can purchase it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So, I'm never going to be the number one book out there, and I never claimed that I was going to get there, but I'm just happy that it's out there. And sure, the thing that I'm proud of too is the way that I designed the book, mm-hmm, you can be a non-wrestling fan and still derive pleasure and entertainment from it. And a lot of people told me, they said, I know nothing about wrestling, but I like this guy. I like what you did. And as you probably know, because you read the book, it's half biography and half cookbook.
Yeah.
And those are stories from people that knew Stan. But the bulk of them are from Joyce Frazier, his wife. So, yeah.
So what's next for you? Do you plan to do any more writing?
Oh yeah. I'm working on a series of books right now, and I got a few other things, in the pike. Yeah. And I'm trying to finish up the cartoon. I have to just re-edit it. I did a cartoon of Stan. I did this during the pandemic, and it's called Tiny the Plowboy.
There you
so,
go. There it is again, Tiny Frazier.
See, there it is. Lake. There oh, it is. And I have Jerry Jarrett doing the voice of Tiny's father, and a lot of people that knew and worked. I got the Fuller brothers doing voices, and a lot of people that knew and worked with Stan over the years did voices for the cartoon. It's done. I just got to re-edit and put it out into the world. It's one of those things, you know. It used to be you could do a cartoon and there were revenue streams, and now you could put your heart into something, yeah, and it just gets swallowed into the abyss. So I want to make sure that it's handled the right way, but it's something, right, I'm really proud of, you know?
Yeah. You got to have a love of the game for a lot of this stuff anymore. It's so hard to monetize things. I mean, it's just not.
Well, different. And in some cases too, you know, going in, you may not make a dime on it, but you're putting out what you know needs to be out there, and you're following your heart. And that was certainly the case with the Frazier book. I'm amazed at how many people have, you know, responded so positively, and people that I never thought I'd hear from in my life are giving me praise on it, which is so gratifying. It ended up being bigger than I thought it could be. So it's just proof you gotta just follow your instincts and do what's right. You know, make it and they will come. Right.
That's right. That's right. And it's worth it. Right. The book, people should read the book. It's a great book.
Thank you.
Hopefully they'll go out and get it. And again, I'm assuming if they do reach out direct to you and get it, they could get a signed copy.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So there you go. There's a perk to getting it straight from Kurt himself. So
yeah,
reach out to him. Do you have a way social media wise for people to keep track of you so they can maybe watch for the cartoon, watch for some of your future books, kind of keep track of what you're up to?
Well, on Instagram, it's Plowboy Kurt. And, I haven't updated that in a while, but that's probably where I'm going to end up putting some of my promotions. And, look for that.
There you go. Well, just follow Kurt on Instagram for all that upcoming stuff. Drop Kurt an email, order a copy of the book. But again, Kurt, it's been great to talk to you and
you talk too.
About Plowboy Frazier. Thank you. Hopefully in the future, we can maybe revisit on some future projects, maybe with the cartoon or who knows what else, and talk again.
It sounds good, man. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, everybody. Be sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty, or it's typically at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me there. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube, because I have lots of classic wrestling content, but also all of my other various podcasts. Go check out all of the WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platform, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. While you're out there, be sure to also check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit classicwrestling.net to sign up for your account and then download the app on all of your devices. I told you to subscribe to me on social media. Keep your eye there. I will soon be announcing next week's guest. But until then, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.